And we are back for show number 265 of the Critical Myth Show. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, who wants to thank the networks for deciding to give us our Friday nights back, but I'd rather have something to watch.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and so it's all the Norwegians' fault. Now I understand.
And this is Bronze Thumb from Australia, and I am experiencing something that I'm unfamiliar with. It's just hunger. Never mind.
I do believe that I am experiencing something as well. Hate for Fox for canceling Fringe. Damn it. Anyway,
I feel the same way.
Yes. Oh, we are going to be talking about the Fringe series finale. In fact, we're going to be talking about three episodes of Fringe. Essentially, the last three episodes are supposed to be one large story arc. But first, Edmund, if you could please, and keep in mind that the time frame is a bit shorter this time.
Yes, we will obviously be talking about absolutely anything and everything that happened in this finale, so you will most definitely be spoiled, but we certainly hope that most of the listeners to this podcast would have been watching this show almost immediately anyway, like we were. So we didn't give you a week this time, but I don't think you needed it.
Watched it live, yeah.
Yes, the networks finally get us to watch something live, and it's the last episode of the show. But anyway. Yeah. All right, we have three episodes, like I said. It basically comprises the final just mega arc of the show. So let's just jump right into it. As you can see, we're going to be a little bit flabbergasted by this because, boy, did this just roll us over last night. And we just felt that we could not wait another week to talk about it. So let's jump right in with, I guess this would be the first part, and here's the promo.
The plan is going to reset time.
In 3 weeks, television's most imaginative show completes its mind-bending journey.
Ending their existence consumes me.
5 epic seasons have all led to 3 astonishing hours that will reveal...
Now.
...everything.
Walter, where are you?
End with September.
Ah, yes. And Edmund, why don't you go ahead and give us this first recap?
Sure. This is Fringe, Season 5, Episode 11, The Boy Must Live. While Walter tries to learn more about the mysterious Donald after Michael's revelation, Windmark undertakes his own quest for knowledge.
Indeed. And, well, the first thought that came to my mind while watching this episode was that, you know, remember back during Battlestar Galactica, in its final season, they had that one episode that was the info dump from hell. That was everything you ever wanted to know about Cylons and were afraid to ask. I was a little worried at the beginning of this episode that that's where this was going, but I have to say the writers for Fringe managed it far better.
Well, I think part of why it was so successful was that, unlike the Battlestar Galactica example, we already knew a lot of it going in.
Right.
Donald told us very little that we didn't already know. He just kind of put the pieces together and sort of gave us a more cohesive backstory.
Exactly. He kind of put all the pieces we had already been told together in a package that we could then see how the pieces were supposed to fit, which was different from the Battlestar Galactica one, because the Battlestar Galactica example was basically the writers trying to put pieces together that they never really put together in the first place.
Well, yeah, they brought together a coherent picture for us at the end of this, where, using the Battlestar analogy, we still didn't have one even when they were done.
Right. Exactly. So now I think this was your typical introductory part of a trilogy of episodes, where it was setting the stage for everything that was going to have to happen. But it also did a really nice job, I thought, of bringing some of the lingering issues from the rest of the fifth season into focus. For instance, we had been talking about this fetch quest that was probably the weakest part of the entire season, because it just felt like it wasn't going anywhere. And in about the space of 3 to 4 minutes, Donald/September managed to make sense of it all and make it not seem quite so egregious.
I very much agree. And then on top of that, he did the thing that Fringe from the get-go has always done, which is ground the big sci-fi things in the emotional, you know, growth and arc of characters. And this kind of you know, much like we had all these individual episodes that would introduce one-off characters and show kind of their arcs and how their attempt to do something good and noble really spun out of control in big ways, we sort of get the meta-narrative that, yeah, September did it all first. You know, there's such a strong emotional grounding to the whole, to everything we learned and to, you know, in hindsight, to pretty much everything that went on. And I think that's also a big part of why the big info dump worked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, I mean, it's rather amazing that a show that, you know, has been so much about sort of, you know, I mean, people developing emotional depth and, you know, and finding relationships and, you know, while Walter and Peter reconnecting and Peter and Olivia connecting, that in the end, it's, you know, it comes down to, you know, no, you've got to give the observers a heart to actually save everything, you know, and it's, you know, it's there, you know, as we were talking about in terms of the previous episodes about, you know, how that lack of emotion is the problem, you know, yeah, and then coming up with this, you know, this one last time travel-y way to, you know, actually bring things back in balance.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that it was very, very interesting how it was all falling into place, that the observers had been genetically engineered, so they really couldn't have children. They had to reproduce in other ways. And it was that leap forward that contributed to a lot of the problem, because there was that need to tinker and to make things better and mm-hmm. not just let nature take its course, but to interfere, which again was the right there at the very beginning of the series, that doing unnatural things with science and not looking at the consequences down the road. And that's exactly what happened. It just went out of control. And I like this idea that it got so bad that the product of all of this, September and the other 11 scientists that were sent on this recon mission, you know, that when they began to see exactly what it was that they had lost, they were willing to destroy themselves in order to fix it, because they saw just where all that led to. And I like that fact that it's so cyclical. And as you said, Brunstam, that wasn't anything new. We've been told this already. But at the same time, we got to see a more grounded version of it, because we got to see how the observers were different from humanity when Peter became one very briefly, or at least started down that road. Now we see the opposite happening, where September became more human. And now we've got this whole father-son dynamic that, boy, I really want to go back and see that first season episode where Michael was first introduced, because I vaguely recall that September and the kid walked by each other and gave a look, and there was never a context for why until now, but it makes so much sense.
Oh gosh, you're not kidding.
Oh yeah, the way that episode unfolded, the original one, was that basically they found the kid and nothing was mentioned, and they did this whole, you know, more procedural episodic story, and then at the very, very end, they're driving the kid away, and September is just on the street looking at him. And mm-hmm. there hadn't been any mention of observers or a sight of them in the episode yet. And then people saw it and they thought, hang on, he's really pale, he's bald,
Right.
And then they just let it linger for 4 years.
Pay no attention, just move on, yes, nothing to see.
Yes. Yeah.
One thing that, yeah, this was a great episode in so many ways, but I wish we had jumped forward into the observer world and seen some more of their city. We got, you know, we see little glimpses of a factory and stuff here and there when they showed that cool graphic of the full-grown observer happening. But I wish we could have seen just a touch more of their world. Other than a city shot, we really don't get to see much. I would have liked to seen just a little bit more.
I don't know. I think that might have been for the best. I mean, we've had all these descriptions delivered in a very clinical way about kind of how hellish they've made their own planet, in a sense, you know, how what they've done to the Earth in their time. So by not describing it, not letting us see it, and not having a human character see it and come back and describe it in very much more human ways, it leaves it open to the imagination. I'm not sure if they could show us something that would beat what we could imagine.
Yeah, but what if they did? But yeah, I know. But what if they did? But it's as if anybody could, they probably could have. But yeah, so that was probably one of my few shortcomings. It was really nice to see September acting with some emotion and hair. So that was quite enjoyable as well. Although, you know, we talk about how when September comes in and starts to talk about, you know, talk about the plan a little bit, I always wonder as we started this, the quest, as we're calling it, why Walter didn't just say right from the beginning what they were trying to do. It always seemed like something that was lingering out. I guess they wanted to do the big reveal towards the end. But at the same point, why not tell them what they're collecting all this stuff for? It would have seemed to make sense from the beginning.
Well, Walter didn't remember. He had it.
Well, I'm just saying, I meant on the tapes, perhaps.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. I'm wondering if maybe his thought was just in case the tapes were ever confiscated, then it wouldn't necessarily give anything away. But, I mean, that storytelling conceit, I mean, to leave that open so the audience doesn't know. But, yeah, it was one of those things that we've been talking about, that
yeah.
It didn't seem all that well constructed if he couldn't just replicate it later, or you know. On the other hand, I do realize that they're dealing with this situation with the observers, where the observers can read their minds
mm-hmm.
eventually. So they had to do something, and using some kind of semi-archaic technology was probably the only thing that they could come up with. Now,
yeah.
I mean, we definitely did get a look at the observers' future. I do agree it was a little short. At the same time, the thought that came to mind for me was that it doesn't look like that different a future from what, say, we would think of as the evolution of our future now. So, you know, how much of a commentary was that to say that are we on that road already? So I kind of took that as an interesting takeaway for the episode.
Also, I've seen this played out before in different types of science fiction tropes and stuff, but it's still a great mechanism for me is when they talk about the human race advancing or someone improving, they start off mentioning the, you know, the bad emotions, and then they just keep going along and along until they wipe out the good ones as well. And that was a really nice sort of line, and I've seen the effect before, and it always seems to hit home. It's so effective that you think you're losing the bad, but you lose the good at the same time. And I think that's part of what September was trying to talk about as he was talking about the cost.
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, for a lot of emotions, I don't know how you could clinically term them as necessarily good and bad, because many of them are just reflections of the same thing. And so what is contextually bad for one person, whoever it is that's making this decision, it could be something necessary, and they're just looking at it from that perspective. And what, you know, it's value judgments. And what happens is that you start taking those choices away, and suddenly you don't know what you've lost until it's gone. Like you were saying, Gary.
Yeah.
Bronstam, you were going to add?
I was just going to say, it goes back to this seven deadly sins idea, which gets explored a lot in fiction, and just the notion that these, you know, cardinal sins are basically just a dark flip side to very, very strong, very core aspects of human nature. Things like the idea of pride, which people just throw around that term all the time with all kinds of meanings and contexts. And I mean, it's arguably a big part of what Walter and September, you know, what they feel for their children and what drives them. It's just as, you know, it's something so easy to flip around, and that's why stuff like, you know, these kinds of stories, they do wind up being very effective, because they force people to think about how, you know, about what is integral to us and the way that we think and act.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, you were saying, you know, the pride that they have in their children, and certainly the pride that Olivia and Peter had for Etta. And then you also look at the, you know, that you could see that as a good emotion. And as you mentioned, at the same time, much of this show has been about the product of Walter's hubris and pride in his own intellect, which created Cortexafan and everything that fell out of that, and also created, you know, a lot of the issues that have come with the alternate universe in that whole war. And one could even argue that it was that same line of thinking that created the observers. It wasn't necessarily William Bell, like I was kind of hoping it would turn out to be. so that we could get another perhaps cameo from Leonard Nimoy. But at the same time,
I was so hoping we would have saw
yeah, right?
at the end of the show. But
that's a really good example, Bronstelm, of one of those emotions that, depending on the context, you can see it as good or bad. So, you know, at what point and what stage of that process did they start stripping pride out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And what did that do? You know, yes, it took away that pride of achievement that maybe was misplaced, but it also took away the pride in other things, the good things, you know, family and society for that matter, because you kind of get the feeling that they're a little bit rapacious of everything. They just use everything as a resource as they see fit. They don't even think about or care about what's going to happen later.
Well, no, that's all. It's all but said as being the reason why they destroyed the planet. They just abused it with none of the thought and concern that comes from having an emotional standpoint.
Right. Yeah, and also just having empathy. You know, the specific thing that you know he talks about Michael having. You know, I mean, it's, you know, if you're just concerned with the intellect and, you know, and you know, can't think about the effect on others, you know, then you just use what you need to and, you know, don't even consider the consequences. If you're taking emotions away, you know, it doesn't work because you're taking something else away. It just makes me think that, you know, Star Trek didn't survive till 2167 because if they'd seen Enemy Within, then they'd know that you can't do that.
Yeah. Well, obviously, they felt the premise was flawed.
Yeah. you know, but, Kirk without the bad stuff can't make decisions. So,
well, it actually comes down to one of those arguments that we've had before, oddly enough, about something like even Harry Potter, where people keep saying that the Slytherins, for all their pride and hubris, are bad. And it's like, well, no. Being clever and ambitious are not necessarily bad things. They're bad if you apply them in that fashion. But it can also be a reason why.
Just because they tend to.
Well,
they
were also under an influence at the time too. You know,
not just the influence of the bad guys, but under the influence of all the good guys who said, "Well, you're in Slytherin, so you must be bad." But that kind of goes into just so many things on Fringe and a ton of other stuff. This idea of, you know, what is or isn't inherently good or bad. I mean, you just listen to some of the traits of Slytherins that are not inherently good or bad. It's just, they can be twisted either way. And the same goes for the traits of every one of the Harry Potter houses. And it's a huge thing. You know, you take the idea of magic and that crops up in so many different fantasy works. And then you go to something like Fringe and the entire oeuvre of Michael Crichton or anything like that. And it's about science and technology. It's just, it is not inherently good or bad. It's just, it's what you do with it. And the idea, and just this idea with the observers, is that they started fiddling so much that they just completely lost all perspective. They can't tell the difference.
Well, it's the idea that fringe means a lot of different things. It's not just the fringe science that they run into, but it's also the fringe of morality. It's the fringe of psychological, you know, stability. It's all kinds of different things. And right now, we're seeing which one is maybe applicable to the observers. So for them, you know, they took science in a direction that was very selfish because they didn't see any reason or logic to not applying it to their own advancement as they saw fit. But, you know, we've kind of gone on and on about the observers, but to be honest, it's kind of this whole thing again, and we've said this before, is a reflection of the idea that they're using the observers in that future as kind of a stand-in for our own society and saying that these are the directions that we could go, and wouldn't it be great if we could just kind of turn things back and having seen where things are going, wouldn't it be great if we could go back in time to when things might have gone wrong and stop it from happening in the first place? But in this case, very much in terms of just the plot, that's where they're going. And I guess the one thing that this did bring up, which left me a little uncertain with this episode, was this idea of, again, going forward, showing the scientists that they're on the wrong track, that they need to advance emotion and intellect together so that there is that empathy that Michael had, which would therefore wipe out the observers. Now, okay, it wipes out the observers. Then, if you get rid of September, September isn't there to distract Walter.
Right.
Or Walternate. Walternate saves his Peter. The Peter in the Fringe Prime universe still dies, because that wouldn't have changed. The assumption on Peter and Olivia's part that they're going to still be together and have Etta didn't quite track for me.
That's why it's a paradox, John.
I get it. But...
I do agree with you, although I think the idea and a big part of what the fourth season proved is that you can only skew some of those events. You know, a lot of those events sort of kind of unfolded the same way when you took one crucial element out, you know, took Peter out altogether. I mean, there almost certainly still would have been the war, because Walter and Belle were experimenting with crossing between universes, even independent of Peter being sick and Walter trying to save him. And it was... I completely lost that train of thought, except that... I love those things sort of would have unfolded the same way. It's not a complete breakdown of logic to think that, okay, take the observers out of the equation and we all go back to having happy lives. It's a little screwy, but not completely rubbish.
Well, the fourth season to me gave two, if not clues, because I don't know that they really thought it through that much, but at least it gave the basis for an satisfying enough explanation, because in thinking about it after the fact and talking to a few people, you know, I said in my review, for instance, that the fourth season demonstrated that even if you were to try to erase Peter out of time, that Walter and Olivia have such a strong connection to him that it wouldn't work. They've already tried. It didn't stick. Now, at the same time, I was also thinking along the lines of what you were saying after the fact that, okay, but the fourth season also showed us that when Peter didn't exist at all, per se, they still had the war, because otherwise how did they have the peace accord on Liberty Island and the bridge? Because the only reason that they would do that would be if they had eventually come into conflict regardless. So your point is well taken, but it's one of those very, you really have to kind of think it through, because they're not giving that right up front to you, which was a little bit odd, because, you know, they're talking about the implications for, you know, they're bringing all these threads in from previous episodes of the season. They're kind of letting you know the new context. They're laying it all out for you. Yet that one point, which a lot of people jumped on, and you've kind of got to think it through a little bit and backtrack. They kind of left that out there. And at the same time, it still also, for me, well, I get all of that, and I even could say to myself, well, Olivia still would have that latent ability regardless, and Walter would have conducted the experiments regardless with the Cortexafan and everything else. So Olivia eventually could cross over one way or the other. I still don't know that necessarily means that Etta would be born, even if, as September was implying, that's the child that was meant to happen. You know, so there are pieces in the fourth season that kind of lead you there, but I still feel like, as you said, it's a little facile, it's a little convenient to parse it out that way. And I kind of see why they wanted to do it that way, especially as we're about to talk about the finale in a few moments. But yeah, that was the one thing that left me a little disquieted at the end of this episode, because as much as I really liked it, I loved the fact that they managed to put all that exposition in there and still make it feel pretty strong, I still felt like there were a few things missing, which is why I wound up giving it an 8 out of 10. How about you, Bronstone? What would you give this one?
I think I'd also go an 8 out of 10. I really enjoyed learning all this good stuff about the observers and seeing that thematic link just come up again so strongly. Though like you, I mean, I was... And yeah, we'll get into it a bit later, but yeah, I was a bit thrown by just how... simplified. Their idea of how to solve everything seems a little too simple.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Edmund, how about you?
I would say an 8 as well. Basically, so similar reasons to what you guys just gave. I mean it's also just partially in the nature of, you know, a setup episode like this. You know, I think they did do it very well, so it is certainly above average. But yeah, but not quite tip top of their game.
And how about you, Gary?
I don't know if it's just because we're reaching the end or what exactly, but I'm going to go ahead and give it a 9. There were a few plot holes, I admit, and some of the premise is a little bit weak, but we got to find out so much about September, and it feels to me like we found out more about the Observers in this episode than in the last season or so. I really liked it a lot. I liked finding out where, you know, Donald got his name from, and then that little quip about, well, this, you know, we've guaranteed this to be 99.99% by Whitmark, and then the other guy chimes back, well, that boy had only a 0.01% chance of living, and you're like, stick it to him. So I think it had several nice moments for me, so I'm gonna stay with my 9.
Okay. It still comes out as one of the strongest episodes of the season. Big surprise there. But, yeah, I think it's time then for us to move on to the actual last 2 hours, which aired together as a finale, so I'm going to go ahead and run that promo now.
I know this is what I'm supposed to do. Trust me. 1, 2.
Olivia, I need your help.
Oh, yes. Gary, why don't you go ahead and do the recap for the first part?
No problem. Season 5, the penultimate episode, episode 12, Liberty. To penetrate the Observer's headquarters and rescue Michael, their only hope for victory, Olivia must use her abilities and meet with some old friends. I have to say, I was really so happy to get to see Olivia one more time. We had talked about this earlier on in the season, that we had hoped that they would somehow go back to visit. And not only were they able to go back to visit, but they wrote it in so well. You know, this wasn't just I wonder how these people are doing. Let's say hello. But, you know, they had a clear, definite, and really good reason to do what they did to get back into the alternate universe. More importantly, they didn't, you know, in a sense, reassemble or turn back on the portal machine, but, you know, they actually went back with the old standby Cortexifan, which was interesting way to go about it. But definitely, given the situation that exists in the world, they obviously couldn't, you know, get the portals back up and working where they needed them to work. So I thought that was a really nice little twist to it. Some of the aging on them, especially Lincoln Lee, he really didn't look like he aged as many years as they were supposed to age him. But that's a small fault that I'm more than willing to overlook.
I think they have better health care on the other side.
Exactly.
I mean, alternate still lecturing at 90. What was it, 90?
Yeah, 90 at Harvard. Yeah. So that's
clearly, you know, someone designed a moisturizer.
That's it. There's an ointment for that.
Yeah. But it was nice, the interplay, and it wasn't really, I want to call this an action scene, but as Walter's giving Olivia the Cortexifan, and, you know, Peter's right there, and he's like torn because she's obviously in so much pain over this, and he knows it has to be done, and, you know, Walt, even the other doctors are saying, oh no, you can't keep doing this, and he basically tells him to stick it, I know what I'm doing, and, you know, but it's this whole scene, and even when Walter, and this is another example of John Noble's work, great work, you know, when he's like looking at Peter and telling him to hold her down to do this, and Peter wants to do anything but it just, you know, through his force, you know, of will almost, he gets him to do it. At least that's how I read the situation. It's, you know, it's really an incredible moment of the sacrifice that these three are willing to make to, to save the world.
Mm-hmm. You kind of had me at the, we were glad to see Olivia. I got to say, Anna, ages well, apparently. I was a little upset that the red hair wasn't there, but, you know, she had the rogue thing going down pretty nicely. So,
and what was that little line of, stop looking at the younger me's ass? Or
yes, that was classic Olivia right there.
That was good.
But, yo, it was really neat, because one of the things that we had talked about before was, you know, all the people complaining that, oh, you know, we've been focusing so much on Walter and whether or not he's going to come to terms with who he is, and Peter having to, you know, embrace his humanity instead of letting it go. And what about Olivia? What about Olivia? Isn't she the main character? And I was just waiting for them to somehow bring back her Cortexifan abilities, and the fact that, you know, she was supposed to be the most powerful latent individual with all these powers and whatnot. So why would they ignore that? And sure enough, here they do, this jump start process, which was one of the most uncomfortable looking things ever. You know, I would have thought that maybe Peter could have given Olivia some pointers on how to deal with having something stabbed in the back of your neck without showing the slightest bit of pain. But anyhow, I thought that was just grueling. I mean, you could just, and it was great to see, you know, like Astrid and Peter just watching with the horror on their faces and not sure what to do about it. And yeah, Walter just having to lay it down the law and be like, this is how it has to be. This, I know what I'm doing. Just let me do it.
Oh yeah. No. And I liked how that, you know, that scene kind of brought to a head. I mean, all, you know, all of his concerns about, you know, having his brain back together was going to turn him into the old Walter. And it was like, you know, yeah, sort of seeing some of that old Walter, you know, surging to the surface again there, where it's, you know, yes, you know, I'm doing the experiment. I know this is what I have to do. So yeah, just get out of my way. And yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was scary. I mean, you knew she, even though you knew she was going to survive it. I mean, you know, they couldn't go through this without, you know, with Olivia dropping dead there, but it was still incredibly tense.
Oh yeah. And then for that jumpstart process to alter her perceptions throughout the rest of the episode, which made what was effectively a very straightforward plot point, which was jump into the one universe, get your support system, break in where you need to, jump over, grab him, come back. It's like, okay, it's like, oh yeah, we're going to tunnel underneath the wall.
Right.
Okay, how do you make this more interesting? Oh, she's going to be seeing back and forth between worlds. Yes. During the entire process. Yeah. Oh, good.
It almost looked like bad 3D effects.
I thought maybe she had the ring on at one point, and but anyhow. but yeah, wow. I really thought that she sold it well, that she was having this problem. And then when the Observer was battling her, I don't know exactly how it was that he tracked from one universe to the other, but that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
that whole fight sequence was really impressive. And
yeah, because at that point it's just like she gets out, and you by that point you've sort of forgotten that the Observers are kind of capable of crossing between universes. Like, it's been so long since we've had any of that stuff happen, we've forgotten about it. And so she jumps back to the Redverse, like, yes, all right, mission six. Oh hell,
exactly. It's like, oh, we kind of forgot they can do that. Oh.
I completely forgot. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, well, that's what she had on her face.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, oh, come on. Really? But what I also like is the implication that, and they kind of put it out there, but they didn't feel the need to explain it. They just put it out there that Michael intentionally let himself get caught because he had figured out, projecting it in his mind or whatever else, that that would force them to have Olivia reactivate her abilities, because you could see that it's like, there's no reason why he did that, but he did it intentionally. There's no other explanation than he felt it was necessary to push them in this direction. And, you know, again, it's a little bit of a convenience maybe to assume that, but he's smarter than the Observers. And we've already seen what they can do in terms of predicting what's going to happen next.
Right.
So to me, it was like one of the, it was a little bit more justified version of what we were saying before about explaining the changes in the timeline and the time paradox and everything else, is that they've already shown us what they're capable of doing in terms of projecting timelines. And he would be way beyond that.
Well, I agree. But at the same time, I thought it was a little bit Seldon-ish. And to assume that, you know, that stepping off there would have literally, you know, done exactly what came out of it. That still seems a bit of a stretch.
Well, maybe not exactly, but I think you know where I'm going with it. The only way they're going to be able to do this is to jump over there, and you get the sense that he knew a lot more about what was going on because he had already shown Walter other timeline memories from other timelines.
No, I agree. Yeah. Although, and then another thing that did strike me funny when they went into the alternate universe was that Fringe is still monitoring for incursions from the other universe. Like, they had had her down the second she crossed over, and I'm like, are they still having problems that we don't know about? Because it just seemed like they wouldn't be on such an active footing with that, 20 years later?
I think that probably because of the unintentional consequences of reopening the doorway, that they would have just had some kind of monitoring system to make sure that if anybody independently came up with what Walter had done, that they would know about it early enough so that it didn't cause other problems later down the road.
Yeah, I'm sure the Blue Universe, like during the truce when they were kind of sharing knowledge and technology a bit more, I'm sure the Blueverse set up a version of the same thing. I mean, if someone's crossing between universes and it's not on one of the Fringe team, you'd kind of want to know.
Yeah. And they're a bit ahead of us anyway as far as technology is concerned.
Yeah. That I just kind of assumed. I mean, given the threat to the, you know, the fabric of the universe that creates, they had just maintained the monitoring, you know, just kept it up and running. So, yeah, that I didn't have much of a problem with. And also, I mean, just to get back to Michael and Widmark, I mean, after, you know, seeing what Widmark could do with a human, I mean, that interrogation scene was just fabulous. Just watching.
Oh, yeah.
You know, hearing the echo chamber, and then Widmark, you know, just literally not able to get an edge in anywhere,
giving himself like an aneurysm in the process.
Yeah. I mean, that was just very well set up, and certainly also speaks to your point of Michael doing this deliberately, just because he knew it's like they can't touch me. You know, I mean, yes, they were going to chop him up in the end, but there was definitely that whole sense of, you know, that Olivia was picking up on, that he knew exactly what was going to happen. You know, yeah, and it's one thing that has been kind of odd. I mean, with his character all along, of, you know, this whole thing, you know, I know he's got, you know, especially after, you know, Donald's explanations of, you know, okay, so he's got all this, you know, intellectual capability and emotional capability, you know, except, you know, he just, you know, is so completely impassive all the time. But at the same time, it was almost like, you know, yeah, if you're that high a level, you know, then, you know, why even interact with people who are, you know, you can see everything coming with. So.
Exactly. The only problem that I can say I had with this one, and it's not that big of a deal, but it's more of a retro problem than anything, is that they brought Broyles back. And just like with that Nina episode a little while ago, it just made me think, he should have been in more.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because the impact would be so much greater than it was. I mean, it was still great to see him just get involved and then kind of go badass, but... I still missed his presence in the show, and I felt like this whole thing of who is the dove was never really a winning plot thread. It just kind of was there and only came up again because it had to.
Well, I just viewed it as it was a nice homage that they gave the actors some, you know, a few meaty scenes to, you know, pay it off for all the fans of that character. And so I really just say thank you for it. Yes, would it have been nice, but at least they gave him this nice little extra, like a vignette, if you want to call it that. And so, you know, so I think the fans of his should be thankful and not look too hard at it. It's just, you know. Thanks for the extra lines before we shut down.
I kind of had a similar sense about the actual, the alternate universe stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong, I loved what we got, but there was just this lingering thing in the back of my mind of just, this is it? Like, I wanted more. But the fact that I wanted more, like, a big thing and part of that is just, I liked what we were getting so much.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, it would have been nice if they could have been around, but I understand why they didn't go back to that universe. And the fact that they even did it at all, they didn't really have to. I mean, they could have found a way to do it without going there, but they did it, and they did it well, and it made sense. And it still was a nice way to just bridge the gap and also give a send-off to a huge part of the show.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I take several of these. You know, the Nina bit that they did, Broyles, and then going over to the island. That's how I've pretty much viewed all these, was just like, you know, a thanks to the fans. You know, we appreciate it, guys. Here's one last look at this thing that you loved, and we're going to tie up the story. But I thought I'm happy they did stuff like this. It's rare that fans get payoff in some of these series. So many times, especially with our science fiction or fantasy shows, they just get killed. you know, here we not only get a nice actual end of a story, but we get these nice little, you know, visits with some of our favorite characters. I'm really happy that they did do these things. And yeah, I agree. There's other ways they could have done it, but you know, they're giving it back to the fans. So I'm grateful.
Mm. Any other thoughts for this particular episode?
Nothing's jumping to mind.
Well, I can say that I definitely love this one. I give it a 9. How about you, Edmund?
Right there with you. Yeah, I mean, started ramping up, jumping back to the other side was the highlight I expected it to be. When this is one of those times where I really didn't, you know, I have my issues with promos sometimes, but when the promo for the finale showed and you got that brief, you know, that quick glimpse of Olivia and Lincoln, I was just looking forward to this all week, and it definitely paid off.
Absolutely. Gary, how about you?
I'm really tempted to give this go all out, but I'll stop at a 9. This was a really fun episode for me. I liked it a lot. I loved the, you know, the Broyles scenes, and I liked going over to the to see if Olivia and Lincoln again. So, geez, I'm right on the edge, but I'll stick back with a 9. It was close, mm-hmm. though.
Bronstein, how about you?
I think I'm going to have to go with the herd on this one and also give it a 9. I mean, I think the only way it could have been better would have been if they were somehow able to give us more time in the alternate universe, but sadly, the laws of, you know, the fourth dimension being what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, that means that we have just one last thing to discuss, one last episode, and that would be the actual finale, the final hour. And Bronstein, if you could do the recap for us.
I surely can. Fringe, Season 5, Episode 13, An Enemy of Fate. The fate of humanity is on the line as Walter plans to make the ultimate sacrifice to stop the Observers before they were ever created. It seemed like the thing to do.
It did. Well, a lot of people were saying going into this one that they had the feeling that it was going to be more of an emotional finale than necessarily a ticking off the plot box finale, no matter how much some people might have liked that. But I think they did a really nice job of setting the stage for all of the farewells and big moments between the characters in this one. And yet there was a lot of action. I mean, this might have been the most action-packed episode all season long, maybe even in about 2 seasons or so. But yeah, Edmund, why don't you start us off here for a little bit?
Yeah, this, definitely. I mean, that was, you know, in some ways sort of the biggest surprise. I mean, after all of, you know, the kvetching about the fetch quest, et cetera, you know, I mean, finally having it really come together. And, you know, yeah, I mean, just making it, you know, just this really, really, really tense episode. I mean, where, you know, they're going from, you know, having the setback of the reactor not being up to charge, having to have that one last plot basically to work out. And I really wasn't expecting to have, you know, sort of that much suspense and tension, but certainly at the same time, I mean, you know, both in terms of having to get the part and then the whole issue with Broyles, you know, when Winmark's suspecting him, you know, bringing back the magic glass listening device that we'd seen earlier, and then just that whole little cat and mouse game with Winmark coming in. You think he's just going to take him, and then it's, you know, no, he's just setting him up, you know. And I love the way they did that in terms of with Broyles in the car, and you know, and then him noticing just that one little detail, the gloves being moved. You know, I thought that was really well done, and you know, then that whole sequence of him trying to lead them astray and getting caught and thinking, he's going to have to take himself out, and that, you know, and the Observer, you know, keeping him from getting to his gun. And then, you know, we were talking about the last episode, sort of, you know, all the little, you know, homages to the fans. And certainly that whole sequence then of breaking into the building to get the part and unleashing all of those the sort of greatest hits of Fringe creatures.
Yeah, I realized I missed the Aliens ripoff episode somewhere along the lines.
Yes.
Well, it's not just the best of Fringe's creatures. It's pretty much all stuff from the very first season.
Yeah.
And it's a payoff of that moment earlier this season where they started using the technologies that they had kind of secreted away. And it's like, oh, we did that once. Oh, no, we're going to do this on a much greater scale.
Yes.
Right down to the butterflies that I believe were in the second or third episode.
Yeah. No, yep. No. They. I think it was like the third or fourth, because the second episode was the one with Amber.
Okay. Right. Something like that, yeah. But it definitely was all stuff from very early on, and so it was a great way to kind of bring that back. And just, again,
continue,
like I said...
Continue this this theme of coming full circle that
right.
season five has been great about. I mean, you know, both in the big thematic ways and in the character arcs, and also in these little details, in that, you know, we've really got... our heroes have kind of become ZFT, the guys who are trying to fight the wanton advancement of technology because they reckon it's going to destroy us all.
Right.
That's actually a really good point because, I mean, irony of ironies, that's exactly it. They're using technology to stop the advance of technology. And as you said, that's exactly what Walter and William Bell put together in their little manifesto way back in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
Or as it was revealed, it became the playbook for ZFT. So for those who were looking for ZFT to be explained or at least, you know, touched upon in the fifth season, well, kinda.
Mm-hmm.
It's another case of the writers just they're trusting us,
right?
Like which you know, sadly, a little too much of that trust appears to have been misplaced. But like it's there. I mean, it's absolutely what they're dealing with, and I think it just works really, really well.
Mm. Now, I mean, besides the point that, yes, they managed to make this into one of the biggest action sequences yet, in action-packed episodes, they still had a lot of little moments, and certainly they took all of that stuff about September being Michael's father and used that to resonate with the moments with Walter and Peter. And of course, back during The Boy Must Live, it was revealed that Walter was going to have to go with Michael and that would effectively mean that he was never coming back. You know, they couched it as he was going to sacrifice himself, but it was fairly clear that if he's going with Michael, that it's not going to kill him to do that. It's just that he needs to go because Michael doesn't communicate with people all that well.
Well, yeah. It seems like Walter's been sacrificing himself for a long time in little and big ways, so this isn't surprising. As I watched the end of this episode, it seemed like each character got the ending they wanted to get.
Right.
which was a fine way to end the show, but at the same time, as you said, you know, Peter didn't get to stay with Walter, and so there, I mean, there wasn't like it was like 100% perfect.
It was,
but
it
the
was
characters themselves got it.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone. I mean, despite the fact that there were these kind of sad moments and there was genuine tensions like that, it's. I can't think of many finales where it seems like pretty much everyone got, like you said, got exactly what they wanted. You had Olivia and Peter getting to have this family with each other that they never really got to have themselves when they were growing up. They got to be real parents forever. You had Walter. Walter got his redemption. He got the chance to step up
and
save the world. Yeah, and not just save the world, because he's been trying to do that for a while, but actually go back and try and fix his biggest mistake.
Right.
He got that chance. It's just, you know, if me not being here is going to set right the things that I, you know, that I did wrong, then he took that hit, and he was happy to. And he did it with the knowledge that he also got the other thing that he really wanted, which was to really be his son's father. Like that moment.
Oh,
man. Joshua Jackson. Oh yeah, you had to be at least a little weepy by that point. And then that coming on the heels of so many things, you just, that whole last act, that like the previous episode, I had issues with the pace. I felt like it was a little too fast. I mean, especially compared to some of the other finales that we've had. But in that last act, that fast pace really worked, because it wasn't just that things happened really quickly together. It was big emotional moments happened together, happened one after the other in a very, very quick succession. And that had me far more, and that had me really interested. I mean, you had just this battle starting and are we going to succeed, that tension. And then Widmark shows up and, oh my God, is he going to kill everyone? No, Olivia is going to just crush him.
Yeah,
like
literally.
It was just a punch the air. Yeah. It was a punch the air awesome moment. And then
oh, yeah.
September, you know, September getting killed by a stray bullet, just chance. Like, it's very, very sad, but 5 seconds later, you get Michael with the music box, and you get September, even though he dies. It's a very Lost-esque death where someone kind of gets the thing they wanted, and they can die happily because he finally got the reciprocation. And then about 15 seconds later, Walter gets the exact same thing.
Yes.
And then it all, just capping it off with the white tulip, was just brilliant.
One moment that felt like it was a little too quick, it was the denouement. That moment after Walter goes through and everything goes to white, and you get 2 minutes of how everything was made right. And I just felt like it was like, okay, that's abrupt. Although I still can't think, because like Bronstam, you were saying, this episode was so packed and fast. There was not one wasted moment in that episode. And for that matter, in the episodes that came before it. So it's not like I can think, oh, well, if they hadn't spent so much time on this, they could have... It was just packed. And I watched this one a second time just before we started recording, and it felt faster the second time than the first time. Even knowing what was coming and being able to savor it a little bit more, it still felt like things were going so quick, and then it was over before you even had a chance to even really digest everything. But I'm interested in knowing, in that last scene with, Olivia was looking at Peter and Etta, and then when Peter was looking at the tulip, did you get the sense that there was more to that than just them in that moment? That it was signified, that the fact that they lingered, even for just a moment, on them staring into the distance, thinking about something, I felt like maybe they remembered stuff.
Like deja vu?
Something like, wow. Like, they were thinking that there was more to that moment. I really couldn't tell if we were supposed to assume that maybe they had memories of previous timelines as well. But
if any two are going to manage it, it'd be those two. And right. I didn't get the specific impression that they were remembering anything in particular. I think it was just letting it linger for the first time in ages and ages on these two having a quiet, happy moment of being the family.
Hmm.
And then following it up with just the delivery of the white tulip, that just very short scene that signifies a lot that I can't quite comprehend and wrap my brain around. I think that's entirely the point, that from the get-go, Fringe has been a show about the unknown. That's the whole point of Fringe Science, the way they explain it. It's about trying to shine a light on things that are unknown and realizing that perhaps it's best not doing that and things like that. And just that having it show up and the symbolism of it to us, because I don't think Peter would have understood the symbolism. He only understood it in the previous versions of the timeline because Walter explained it to him, but the way that was shot and everything was just such a great callback to the actual White Tulip episode, and just the idea of receiving it and not understanding how, but kind of comprehending the meaning of being something positive, being something hopeful. It was such a great, great emotional beat to end on, I thought.
Walter would have been... See, here's the weird part about it, right? Because Walter was supposed to be around at that point.
Yes,
so
he was.
Why would that have happened? That's the other thing that I'm kind of left like. Was this them leaving the door open for something else? Just a crack. Because it's not like he disappeared from the timeline. He's supposed to still be alive. So why is he sending Peter the white tulip? That's like, whoa.
Some of the plot mechanics are kind of iffy, and I think that's part of why the fast pace tweaked at me, because it was just going at such a breakneck speed so that either we couldn't quite absorb the intricacies of how this was all supposed to work, or the intricacies of how this is all supposed to work don't quite work.
Well,
Focusing on the emotion.
Hmm.
Yeah. I wasn't sure what was going to happen when they flash back to the park scene again. I was pleasantly surprised that everything sort of played out peacefully, but I half expected Walter maybe to pop out of like the time verse or whatever, or something else to happen instead of nothing happening. That was a little bit of a surprise for me as well.
You get the nice observers that are coming back to visit and say hello, and it just turns out that they've been coming along all this time, and everything's great because the observers are taking care of everything.
Yeah, we're going to stop global warming.
Yeah, no, I know that was one that, you know, that's, you know, in this, yes, it's only been 24 hours or so, but, you know, but in terms of the speculation about, you know, oh, no, if the observers aren't there, and, you know, no, that means, you know, Walter wouldn't have been distracted, and Walter wouldn't have gone over, and, you know, I certainly agree with the speculation that, you know, yes, I mean, Walter and Belle were experimenting with it anyway, so that part of it would have happened, and the blue vest beta
still got sick and oh, was dying, and that was a big part of why it was developed in the first place.
Well, exactly, and the other theory that's been popping around in my head in terms of, you know, okay, why is it just 2015 that, you know, and after that gets changed was, you know, no, that, so, you know, observers in some form, but, you know, more in a Michael type form, may have been developed. So, you know, no, I mean, there could have still been, you know, observers who were there just as observers. And, you know, so in my version of events now, it's like, you know, no, I mean, that distraction still could have happened, but, you know, that part of the story is still there. So it's really just eliminating the bad observers who want to invade that, this was resetting. But,
well, I still feel like having that moment that felt just a little bit off at the very, very end was intentionally done to leave that little bit of mystery still there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. So like Bronson, you were saying, it speaks to the whole idea of fringe science of there's always going to be that mystery that you can't solve.
Yeah. Now, did you think it was that, or I honestly took it as sort of a writer's conceit that they wanted to throw one little, you know, sort of twist at the very end and just, you know, sort of, I don't want to say rub it in our face, because I don't think it came from like necessarily a bad point of view, but sort of like, see, this is how smart we've always been. Ta-da! You know, it just like a small conceit, I guess, or something along those lines. I mean, that's sort of how I felt it was. It was just sort of the writer saying, look how cool we are. We did this.
I don't know. Like I said, it works perfectly fine as it is. But it is one of those little things that if they hadn't done it, it would have been just as well. But by doing it, it just leaves you a little bit wondering what's going on. So that maybe they just leave it on a note of mystery. I know that, you know, it for all that we know, they could decide to tell more stories in some other medium. I mean, there are three books coming out that serve as prequels that tell some of the backstory of what happened back in, say, Jacksonville. Oddly enough.
Really? Oh, yes. How convenient.
Yeah, isn't it? But we'll see. You never know. There could always be more coming down the road. I know that they're releasing September's Notebook, literally the book that September took out of that hidden compartment in The Boy Must Live.
Right.
They've actually made it, and they're selling it. Not unlike the Lost Encyclopedia when Lost was over.
But it's written by the same people.
Right. So that's neat. But yeah, I have a feeling that this is one of those things where they wanted to leave it open. I just really have to say that for me, though, no matter what we talk about plot and everything else, this was one of those finales that was meant to hit you with the characters in their moments. And like you said, everybody got what they wanted in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And how often does that happen? And what better way to end the travails of the fifth season? I mean, they had everything taken from them. It just seems fitting that they should all get what they want at the end.
Yeah. 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 And I have to make specific mention. I mean, in terms of all those moments, the one we haven't talked about is Walter and Astrid, which I just thought was beautifully done as well.
Yes.
I mean, both, the whole thing of, finding Jean, and, I thought her very sensible reason for not cutting her out, you know, and just that, I mean, beautiful acting from both of them, and that final payoff, you know, all those years of getting the name wrong, you know, just so, you know, yeah, in that final moment, it just has even more impact when he gets it right.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up what I always seem to bring up in some of these type of stories, in that I still remember that one paper that I read so long ago where somebody was saying that the heart of American literature is the relationship between the father and son. And regardless of Olivia being the central character in the show and having that big payoff of being, you know, the more human than human person, the Peter and Walter scenes in this episode were just strongly affecting. And certainly Walter being able to finally tell Peter that he was the greatest thing that he's ever done in his life. I mean, and then to have that payoff at the very end. Certainly somebody...
And Peter
somebody
actually calls him dad.
Yes. You know? It was
That's what struck me. Yeah.
it was tough, and then of course paralleling that with the September Michael material, so I think that it was definitely in keeping with that theme, that very Western theme of fathers and sons, and they did a very nice job of tying off that part of the trinity of main characters, and then passing you also have that thematic moment and almost mythical thing of the generational handover, where in order for the son to go on with his life and make his own life, the father then must move on, metaphorically or otherwise. Mm-hmm. And of course, Walter is metaphorically dying in this episode because they pretty much, as I said before, they framed it that way. Walter will die. Walter has to sacrifice himself. And so Walter must go into the future in order to make things right and tie off his character arc. But at the same time, that means that Peter gets to have Olivia and Etta, and his world is now right as well. So you've got some very big mythical and thematic things going on in this finale, on top of the fact that it all fits so damn well with the series as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So, a very powerful episode, and certainly it would be hard to remember a finale that managed to mix all that action and plot-heavy material with so many just incredibly powerful character moments.
You're right. Yeah, as you're talking about the father theme, you think of Peter's fatherhood. You think of September Donald's fatherhood. Then of course you think of Walter's fatherhood, and it's just it's so fit well so well together in this episode. Yet I never really saw it coming. It was sort of odd how it snuck up. And as you said, it's been there all along. How did we not, not see that theme that's running? I guess suppose it's a sign of good writing in the sense that they built the pieces and we did, we didn't see the forest for the trees. So it hit me right after when September actually died that it sort of sunk in this whole father issue, and it was just another wow moment for this thing to hit me, as if it can't hit me enough. It hasn't. I get an extra little zinger in here along the way, and it shows some of the level of the writings that they did, all the way back to, as you said, when September sort of glanced at Michael. It really feels like they knew what they were doing the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that they obviously may have had the broad strokes down, but they couldn't possibly have had all these little details down. I mean, they had
that's to be expected, and part of it is you've got to be a bit fluid to account for things that happen along the way that are beyond your control, and then the idea that they might just have better ideas along the way.
Yeah,
and then some of those better ideas turn out to be terrible. I mean, they probably never intended to make Lincoln as prominent a character as he became, or other things that I totally can't think of right now.
Well,
and I mean, the whole Bolivia arc as well.
They've had some moments. I mean, we remember back in the second season where they tried to launch a whole new character that I think was in two episodes. Agent Jessup, what happened to you?
There were people on the comment on comment threads and stuff like that just last week complaining that the show never paid that off.
I think maybe you should let that go. Seriously, just let it go. But no, I mean, there's been things, and they've come back and said that they feel in retrospect the whole thing with Peter last season was a mistake, although I feel like there were certain themes that came out of that were paid off so well in the fifth season that it would have been less for not having it there. But on the whole, I'd say that this, you've got people like Ron Moore, and to bring it full circle with the Battlestar Galactica references at the very top of the show, for all that he is the type of writer that likes to start with a concept and then just see where it takes him, we saw with Battlestar Galactica how that actually had some pretty bad consequences later down the road, and it took what was really strong and kind of weakened it by the end as an overall series. For Fringe, boy, this is like the example of doing it right. And I still feel like this is them learning certain lessons from the Lost model and refining it and really just, again, doing it better.
Yes.
You know, being tighter with the mythology, keeping the theme strongly in mind the all the way through, even as you're changing permutations of and combinations of those plot elements, always sticking to the focus of the characters and the themes behind them. And we see that all coming together here at the end. So I'm going to go and say, despite the fact that I was really waffling for the last 24 hours, certainly this discussion brings it crystal clear to me that this ended off with a 10. How about you, Edmund?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, just everything ramps up and gets paid off. The ratings do, too. So, yeah, had 10 for this. I mean, as much for the episode and kind of for the series, too. So.
Hmm. Gary, how about you?
I'm still going to give it a 9. It was really good, guys. I'm not trying to say it wasn't. I personally felt it was a great closing for the show. It definitely respected both the storyline and the fans. It just didn't quite strike everything that I felt it should have for me, and I can't put my finger on it, but I just felt that I could have had something just a little bit more out of this. So I'm going to end it up at a 9, but good gosh, I was late to the show, but I'm really glad I caught up, and yeah, I'd still give the series a 10 for anybody who hasn't watched this, or if you're still listening to us and you haven't caught up on this show, please go back. It is well worth your time to sit back and enjoy it.
And Bronstem, how about you?
I'm teetering a little bit because I don't think it was complete. Like, I had some pacing issues, and there is some plotting, you know, complexities that when you think about them, they don't quite line up, but it was just wall to wall moments. And there were awesome moments like, you know, Olivia versus Widmark or the Cabin in the Woods-esque rescue mission and all these, you know, emotional moments between these, you know, these family units, stuff like that. And just, you know, ending it on this moment of, I'm not quite sure I understand what has happened in the last 5 seconds, but what is this feeling like, sort of thing. It's just, so yeah, I'm going to go with the 10. It's not the, you know, hands down absolute best series finale ever. And personally, I think I still prefer the Lost one, which did take a bit more time, but it was just such a brilliant way to cap off a brilliant series.
Absolutely, and I do want to remind anybody who may be thinking, but you pointed out that there were issues with it. The difference between a 9 and a 10 quite often is just the personal impact that an episode can have, and whether or not it just, you don't care after a certain point that it had flaws. It just hits you as hitting that ultimate point where you just are always going to think of it as being an amazing amazing episode or production. And certainly I think that this deserves to be up there with The Bullet That Saved the World and some of the other big episodes of Fringe. And I would say that it does rank up there with some of the best series finales. I would put it up towards Lost, and I would also put it up towards even something like Babylon 5, although that still reigns as the eternal champion in my mind.
Yeah, Babylon 5 is still the absolute best series finale ever.
Absolutely. Yeah, and just one last thing. I did want to mention that in that final shot or that final sequence, there was a wonderful little shout out to the fans, which I'll admit I didn't see at the time, but screenshots were posted later. And the envelopes that Peter's going through, there was a very prominent thank you for your support, which I thought was a very cool little Easter egg to throw in there.
And very much since we just mentioned the Babylon 5 series finale, the same kind of little shout-outs that JMS used to throw into things, too. So, well, there we are. That is Fringe. I guess we can call it a wrap. I haven't fully calculated what the series itself gets. It's certainly going to be up there quite a ways. But the fifth season right now is coming in around an 8.4, which would be the highest scoring season out of all five. So, I think it's appropriate.
And you know this thing will not get one nomination for any award at all. You know, it's so, you know, it so deserves it. If it had dealt with any other subject but science fiction, they would be getting nominations right now. And it's just it's sad that these actors do such an incredible job for season after season and get no recognition except from us, of course. Thank you. Thank you to the whole cast. You guys did great.
It's going to be very difficult to conceive of a television season without John Noble, Anna Torv, Josh Jackson, all these guys, and wonderful actors and actresses. It's been a great show to watch. Yeah, I mean, certainly I never thought that the show that was really just trying to be a modern take on the same material as The X-Files would wind up, in my mind at least, just
trouncing
it, just exceeding it to such a large degree. This is what The X-Files wanted to be.
Absolutely.
What more can you say, right? Any last thoughts, guys, on the finale or Fringe in general?
I still think something's up with Gene.
Gene is really.
I got my eye on her.
I'm just glad that I got to watch it and see it. So that when everything's said and done, I'm glad I saw it. So that's probably the highest praise you can give something.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say, I mean, like with Babylon 5, I am glad I have the DVD set sitting on my shelf so I can go back and watch it again from the beginning now that I know where it's headed.
And as a side note, I look forward to some of these actors like, you know, John Noble and Anna Torv. Hopefully they'll get picked up to do something else equally as thought-provoking. And even if it isn't in this genre, they are such good actors and actresses that I look forward to seeing them again.
Yeah, now Josh Jackson can go and make the Uncharted movie.
There you go.
Because I'm totally on board with he's my new front runner. But I'm really looking forward to being able to go back and rewatch the whole series, because that's one of the big pluses of the way shows are done nowadays, between the home media and a lot more thought going into the arcs and the themes and stuff like that, is that more and more shows you get something new and entirely different, but just as awesome going back, going through the whole thing again, knowing how it's going to turn out. So that's going to be fun.
Absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...
Peter, how are you going with the synchroscope?
No synchroscope yet, but I found some sort of syringe. Any idea what that was for or why you had it?
I have no idea.
This tape is addressed to me. It's your handwriting.
Peter, I sent you a letter. It contains something of mine.
What letter, Walter?
I imagine you called me to ask why would you send such a strange letter. And when you tried to call, I didn't answer. So you came to find me at the lab. But I was not to be found. I was here one moment, then vanished from the face of the earth the next. want you to know I'm fine. And living many, many years from now.
What is this, Walter?
You will never see me again. You will never see me again because it had to be this way to ensure the future of our humanity. Your future. The future of Olivia. And the future of Etta. I don't want you to be sad. The time we had together, we stole. I cheated fate to be with you. And we shouldn't have had that time together, but we did. And I wouldn't change it for the world. I don't want to say goodbye. But I will say, I love you, son. I wasn't truthful with you. I do know what that is. It's an inoculation for time travel. I'm taking the Child Observer into the future, Peter. I was already inoculated in 2015. I left this one in case something happened to me and someone else had to bring the boy across to complete the plan.
Does it have to be this way? Why?
Because, Peter, the boy and I, we will become a paradox. Nature abhors a paradox. It has to heal itself. It does so by deleting me and the boy at the moment of the invasion. The boy and I will disappear after 2015.
So in order to maintain a future without the observers, you and Michael have to live out the rest of your lives in the future.
I know in my soul this is what I am supposed to do. I want you to give Olivia your daughter back. I want to give you your life back. As a father, how could I not do that for you? What I said in the tape about stealing time with you, I meant it. I would trade it for the world. You are my favorite thing, Peter. My very favorite thing.